This is Home Tech, show 107, recorded on February 28th, 2013. Here on Home Tech, we cover all your favorite gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska, and we post the show with world-class show notes, by the way, each week out at theAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, you can contact the show, send me an email, podcast at theAverageGuy.tv, find me on Twitter, I'm just at Jay Collison. Or you can follow the show schedule at TheAverageGuy.tv. You can also join us for live chat during the show each and every week at TheAverageGuy.tv/live. Live chat is right below. Just go right down there. Right below, if you're at TheAverageGuy.tv/live, there's chat. You don't even need to have a user account. You can just create a name, sign in, and join us in chat. We'd love to have you down there. Love to have you out with us each and every week. All right, we got a really busy show tonight. Did want to cover some things, though. We got a lot of stuff coming up over the next couple weeks. So bear with me for 1 second, and we'll dig right into the networking part of the show here. First, I wanted to say thanks to Landon Story. He contacted me via podcast at theAverageGuy.tv this week and sent me some links, some networking links in response to the show from last week. And so I always appreciate those contributions that you give to me, especially when it's right on topic. So Landon, thanks for your links. If you ever have anything you want to share with me, I appreciate it every single time, you can send those to me, podcast at theAverageGuy.tv. Also want to let you know that Mike Howard and I are going to be on Podcasters Roundtable tomorrow. So if you're listening to this recorded, you're probably going to miss, you'll have already missed it, but you can go out to just podcastersroundtable.com, and the recorded version will be out there. Mike Howard are joining Daniel J. Lewis and Ray Ortega for an edition of Podcasters Roundtable. We're going to talk about starting a second podcast. So if you're thinking about podcasting, you're in podcasting, or you just like listening to us, head out there tomorrow, podcastersroundtable.com. That is at 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, and that is tomorrow, the 1st of March, and I think tomorrow's Friday, so let's do that. And then next week, just an interview. So we're going to do a Home Tech interview in this slot on Thursday. I'll have Daniel J. Lewis with me, and he and I will do an interview we actually tried to do 3 weeks ago, and we'll get that done. Of course, Daniel J. Lewis is behind the Audacity to Podcast. The Audacity to Podcast. He's the host of that, and we'll talk some more about some podcasting. I'm going to dive deep in with him on Audacity. So if you're wondering how to edit audio, or work with audio in any way, or you've got some questions about Audacity, you might want to be out here for that show. 8 p.m. Thursday night, next Thursday, AverageGuy.tv/live. And then we're just missing Christian and Andrew tonight. Andrew had to go into work, and Christian had to work on his homework at home. And so we'll miss those guys tonight, but I've got a full slate of guys ready to talk home networking this evening. So I'll go left to right, and we're going to dive right into this. But all the way to my left, and a guy that's now in the Big Ten, Bill Pullman. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jim?
Good. Good to have you. We're going to have some rivalries over the next couple of years. I'm pretty excited about that.
One can only hope.
All right. Yeah, for sure. And then to his right, and coming from Las Vegas, of course, Greg Welsh. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. And you just moved, right? You're in a new place?
Yeah, a little different, a little cleaner, a little bigger, that kind of thing.
Is that the office, or are you just out in the living room?
It is the living room, but I got kicked out of the office.
Where'd you put the big Norco? Where's that sitting now?
Oh, that's in the laundry room. Nice, right. Quiet spot, yeah.
Get your server in the laundry room.
Yeah.
Very nice. And then if you follow him on Facebook, he came across a guy, I swear I know that guy, Kevin, but Kevin Schoonover, he's in San Francisco, caught a guy in a red velvet suit heading from Vegas to San Francisco. Was that serious, or did you find that somewhere on just
no,
online?
That was the guy sitting next to me. He had the window seat, and he sat down in a fairly broken European accent. It was something to the effect of, I have too much fun in Las Vegas. And then he drifted off to sleep.
Then he was asleep. It was a great picture, just perfect. for what Vegas is. So, and you're in San Francisco. You get to go home tomorrow?
Yep, tomorrow morning I'm out of here.
So. All right. Very good, very good. Well, thanks for coming on. And then all the way to the right, and our Australian representative, since Andrew couldn't make it tonight, and all things networking, Rennie Phipps. Rennie, how are you?
Doing well, mate. I'm just a little bit over this wet weather we've been having for the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. We've only had one day of sunshine, I think, but it's been keeping it a bit cooler, so not too bad.
Yeah, very cool. We're glad you're here. Well, let's dig right in. We got a lot of material to cover. At one point, I thought we were going to have to split this into two shows, but I do indeed want to get this done. Guys, if you followed last week, and I want to thank the hosts that were on the show last week who kind of set the tone, and we may actually do one more week of this. In fact, I am going to interview the guys from BYOB in this format, and they're going to talk about their home networks, both Mike Fauché and Michael Martis. Are going to join me, not this Saturday, but next Saturday. And I'll have to look up that date here. It is March, that will be March 9th. Either March 9th or 10th. We haven't decided on a date yet, but I'm going to run them through their networking setups. But this is part two of a series we put together on home networks, and these guys have been kind enough to put together some really nice diagrams that we'll take a peek at. And Kevin, we're going to start with yours. So take a few minutes, kind of walk through a little bit of your setup. You can talk about it from a historical standpoint of how you got there or whatever you want to do as you're talking about that. And this is, if you're listening to the audio, we're going to actually have kind of the show notes live. So you might want to stop the audio at this point, head over to YouTube. You can go to youtube.com/theaverageguy and catch this one on video. There's going to be a lot of visual stuff. But Kevin, walk us through a little bit of your network setup.
Sure. Are you able to pop the diagram up there?
Yeah, let me slide that up real quick here. And it's so big that I could only get, there we go. I kind of have to split screen, so I'm at the top part of it now.
Okay, there we go. So I started with kind of a traditional network, router, and over the years I've upgraded things. Most recently, swapped out the router for a firewall, and it just kind of struck me that I think once your router stops getting firmware upgrades, it's probably a good time to swap out to something new and different. Kind of a common theme of my network is sort of a distributed network. There's a switch in the middle that most major components plug into, and then different rooms in the house where I wanted wired networking, I have smaller gigabit switches there. So I have basically the entire network is gigabit. Seem to get good deals on the old 3Com Office Connect product line. That's worked out well for me over the years. But starting at the top there, come in Comcast network or cable modem comes in through a Cisco DC3008, I believe it is.
What kind of speeds do you get, Kevin, on that? What's your up and down speed?
I think I'm about 25 down, 20 to 25 down, and about 3 to 5 up.
Okay.
So the big change recently was the Zyzel, I finally found out it's pronounced, firewall.
Zyzel.
Zyzel. I thought
it was a couple of those switchers myself that you have talked me into buying.
So this is their smallest firewall, and good reviews. Lots of guys use the next set up, the 50 class firewall for small businesses. The 20, basically the same product with just a little bit less of the UTM, the Unified Threat Management functions. But in deploying this, I found out a couple of neat things right off the bat. Input on it, standard input from the modem, but then there's three types of output. There's two different LAN outputs and a DMZ. And you see the little picture of the phone there. I've got one of the UMA IP-based systems. And the UMAs always seem to work the best when they sit between your cable modem and your router or firewall. And for whatever reason, Comcast service just, I seem to have service drops whenever I plugged it in that way. So when I put the UMA behind the router, then it might have been my old router, but I never got as good a performance or sound quality out of the IP, voice over IP. So with the new firewall, I've got a DMZ, for those who aren't familiar with DMZ, it's basically outside of the firewall, and the UMA works great hanging off that port. LAN 1, if you can see in the picture there, that's the main LAN for the house. That's what everything is on, that LAN. And I use the LAN 2 ports to go off to a server and a workstation that's kind of my goofing around, playing around, testing stuff. And I wanted to experiment with that because I'm sure this never happens to anybody else, but sometimes when you're playing around with stuff on the network, you do something wrong and all of a sudden people aren't able to stream and problems occur. So I'm trying a separate LAN straight off the firewall.
Kevin, let me go back real quick on that DMZ point. It's not just a UMA that requires that. I also had Packet 8 voice over IP, and their tech support had me set it up on a DMZ right away. So I know a lot of guys are switching over to voice over IP, one solution or another. If you're having trouble with it, and with me it kept dropping, so we just lose, we just lose service, and it wasn't necessarily during a call, but we go to pick up the phone, and of course Sarah would say, "There's no dial tone," and so their tech support walked us through a DMZ. So a really good solution to get that. I think it's kind of necessary or mandatory at this point. You get that on there. So good point. I got a little behind on you on that one.
Oh no, that's a good one. And like you say, it's I think more and more folks are going to the IP based product. So it's a nice way to tie all that together.
Yeah.
So looking around the network, you can kind of see how to the family room and the master bedroom and to the downstairs family room. I've got gigabit switches there, so each of those is an individual connection back to that core switch. And then generally in each of those areas I have some type of a small home theater PC, a DVD player. In the main family room I have a Home Run and a Home Run Prime TV tuners for recording live video or cable card video. Xbox and Wii are tied into the network downstairs as well. And the main server for the house is a Micro Server 40 N40L running Windows Home Server 2011. And then I've also got the IOSafe N2 NAS as well, a couple of HP printers.
Both which we've demoed something of yours. I think we did the IOSafe, unboxed it on the show. If you go back a couple shows, I can't remember. I was going to go back and try and find it, and I can't remember which one it was. But go back a couple shows, and we unboxed the N2, and then, of course, we talk a lot about the N40Ls. You have the N36L as well. Is that kind of your test?
Yep.
That's in your lab?
Yep, that's the test guy. Right now, I've been playing around with some of the free NAS or NAS free products. Just kind of want to get a feel for those and see what that's all about as well. From there, the things I do. Probably the other big ad I had recently was up at the top. I used to have a couple of wireless access points around the house, and when I got my Surface tablet, I didn't have, not that I had to have it, but I didn't have a wireless access point that supported the 5 gigahertz spectrum. And instead of having two access points around, I decided to replace it with, the brand is Ingenious. This is their EAP600, which is their small business ceiling mount product. And was thinking I'd probably need two of them to cover the whole house. But as I did some testing with it, we have a two-story house, and luckily there's a laundry chute right up the middle of the house. And that laundry chute backs up to a linen closet. And that EAP600 is mounted in the ceiling of the linen closet, power over Ethernet connection, so I didn't have to run any power to it. And it covers the whole house. One access point will take me to all corners of the house and all the way down into the basement as well. So
ceiling mounted, right? So ceiling. This is ceiling mounted. You said Ethernet powered. So just run a cable to it, mount it to the ceiling, you're good to go.
Right. And the only thing to get with the power over Ethernet or the Ethernet powered function, you either have to have PoE ports on your switch, or you can always buy what they call a PoE injector. and lots of companies make them. They're a variety of price ranges, but they're pretty. That's a pretty nice system.
That's a new concept. We really haven't talked about power over Ethernet on the show before, and that. So I'm assuming that Office Connect Gigabit 16 has power over Ethernet, though.
It does not. No.
Oh,
it's old. I don't have it in the drawing there, but the box I used was from a company, Ubiquitous Networks. Happened to pick up one of their power over Ethernet products.
Okay.
It's called a power over Ethernet injector.
Okay.
And the only thing you have to watch with those is because they do pass the Ethernet through, they come as 100 megabit or gigabit versions. So if you have a gigabit connection going to your wireless access point, make sure you pick up a injector that does the same.
How much for those?
The injectors are anywhere from 25 to 50, depending on who you're getting them from.
Okay.
I think the Ubiquitous was right around $30.
And like one injector per device then, so to speak?
Yep.
Very cool, guys. Questions? So Kevin, did I cut you off too early? Any questions on Kevin's setup here?
You said that was a 5 gig on that the Ingenious?
Yeah, it's dual, concurrent dual, so it runs 2.4 and 5 at the same time. And you can have up to 8 SIDs on it.
If folks are just listening to this show for the first time, the guys talked a lot about 5 and 2.4 gigahertz on wireless at the end of the show last week. So if you go to theaverageguy.tv/HT106 and go to the end of the show. We'll listen to the whole thing if you haven't heard it yet, but go to the end of the show. You can catch some of that that good talk around 5 gigahertz and 2.4 bands and some of the problems with the 5 gigahertz band, honestly.
Yeah, distance. The first thing I noticed was, you know, the signal drops off a little more rapidly than 2.4. And probably a little hard to see in my drawing here, but the things that run wireless in my house are Surface RT tablet, Galaxy Tab, you know, a couple other tablets, a Motorola and a Lenovo, a couple of laptops. I do have a couple of Sony Dashes, probably the coolest clock radio you'd ever find. And then the right off the switch to the right side there is the bridge for my Sonos system. And for Sonos's in-home music system, we could do a whole show probably on that topic. I have 10 zones with that, and the Sonos actually sets up its own mesh wireless network. So the bridge is what allows you to communicate from your and take the streaming from your media systems over to the Sonos system, and then the Sonos sets up its own network, but it uses your DHCP and picks up IP addresses. So things like Bellark will see them, your Windows servers will see them as other media servers, but they don't actually put a load on your wireless network.
Man, how do you have time to administrate all this?
I've tried to keep, you know, actually that's something over the years I've tried to make this stuff as simple as possible. In the show notes, you know, we can talk a little bit more about Bellark. I find to be a good tool to kind of see what's going on with and where things are laying out. I've had great luck with Windows Home Group to basically, you know, get you on the network and get you in with the printers and shared services as well. So.
Yeah, you know, Bellark is a company, we've talked about this a bunch, so there's some, if you go back again, go to theaverageguy.tv, search for Bellark, B-E-L-A-R-C. We have talked about them before. They have a product called the Advisor, a must run before you blow away, your hard drive and start over if you're installing Windows. It will tell you everything that's on there, including serial numbers if they have access to it.
Absolutely. Another little benefit of Bellark for the average guy, when you get down to the middle section where it's analyzed your network, it'll try and tell you what each device is. And I know I tend to be one of these guys who, if I haven't logged into a router or something that is configurable on your network, it's always a little bit of that, hey, what IP address was that set at, or how do I access that? Bellark will actually highlight it as that it has web services. You can click on that and it'll take you right to the device.
Yeah, all kinds of hyperlinks available. They actually use a Crystal Reports engine to create that report, and all kinds of hyperlinks inside the report itself to kind of click around and to get to stuff. It's pretty cool. It's a good little tool. Guys, any questions? Kevin, anything else you want to cover?
You know, and I'll probably hand off to one of the other guys. We if we have time, you know, I know on the last show a couple topics came up around if I was building a new house or wiring a house, you know, how would I do these things? In my case, part of the reason I did the distributed network the way it was is to limit the amount of wire I'd have to pull in and, you know, drilling holes through walls and that type of thing. So it's worked out well. Obviously, if I was building a new house, there'd be a lot of things I would do to pull cable properly the first time.
And would like what? What would you do? Just in a quick, as you're setting up, how would you do it differently?
You know, for wherever the family room or the main entertainment area, I'd probably pull a lot of connections there. I think I'd head where, even though the distributed switch network I have with little 5 and 8 port switches around, I'd probably try and get away from that and run as many solid connections down as I could and have one, you know, decent 24 or bigger port switch in the basement to kind of run everything back to, run Cat 6 at least for everything. If the price wasn't too high, I would probably pull a couple of pulls of Cat 7. Just, never say never, but 10 gig is not that far away. And the way media is going with 4K TVs, who knows what you might need for right, now, bandwidth in the future.
Cat 7, that's for the first time we've said Cat 7 on the show. So Cat 7 is what? The new standard for 10 gigabit?
Cat 6 will support 10 gigabit, but Cat 7, Cat 7 Plus is kind of the standard they're driving for copper RJ45 10 gigabit connections.
Okay, so it's different. It's not twisted pair anymore.
It is twisted
pair. It is twisted pair. Okay. Yep. Okay. Yeah, I guess I haven't. I haven't got that far yet. Holy moly! Would you? So when you talk about pulling wire, would you do something like pull 3 or 4 wires to each room, so they're already there? Is that what you're talking about?
No, absolutely. So if I was building a new house, I think any room in the house, I'd pull a minimum of 2 Ethernet cables. And then to a main area, like that, you know, the media area where you're going to have your home theater and that type of thing, I'd probably pull anywhere from 4 to 6 in those kind of areas. Which is, as I'm talking about it too, you know, the from my daily, my regular job and business point of view, wireless and Wi-Fi stuff is, wireless is getting stable enough where, you know, you probably don't need as much hardware connections, but I still like to, anything that can run hardware, I would just as soon run it hardware and leave the wireless for things that move around.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I thought for a long time, I couldn't wait till everything was wireless in the house. You know, I almost thought, this is silly that we even wired our houses. You know, that's crazy. Everything's going to be wireless. And I think, right, we ran into some problems with that, and wireless is not the be-all, end-all. Right, going forward, maybe?
Well, I think it's getting better and it's getting stronger and more stable. I think one of the things with wireless is wireless access point, say it's a 150, a 300, even a 450 gig, depending on how many devices you have hanging off that, they all share that bandwidth of that spot. Whereas, you know, wired Ethernet, if you plug in and you have a gigabit connection, you have a gigabit of throughput. Now, depends on what data you're pulling over. If you're backing up, you know, when we're backing up PCs, I still like to plug a laptop into a gigabit Ethernet port and get that full connection. If you're just streaming media, you know, even several laptops or tablets sharing a 150 meg wireless connection is plenty of bandwidth. But I think that's one of the confusing things around wireless is you look at all the laptops in your house or connections in your house, and they're all connected at a wireless end connection, but they're all sharing that wireless end connection, so they only get a certain portion of it.
Okay. Guys, questions for Kevin? I think Mike Martis wants to know why you don't have fiber running in your house yet.
Well, that's a whole other show, and I don't know if this is bragging or just showing stupidity, but at one point in time, I had an EMC AX100 storage array that was fiber channel. So I did have fiber in my house at one time, but I think he's referring more to like Verizon Fios, and I wish I had that. But we had some demo models of these very large fiber channel storage arrays. Several people took them home, and most people brought them back after they saw the first couple months of electrical bills running a very hot, loud storage array.
Yeah, yeah. All right, good stuff. Pretty impressive. It is, you know, the right now as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about all these. I'd almost run a big fat PVC pipe through the house, you know, where I would want the backbone. And then so that even in the future, if I needed to run more cable, it might be a little easier to fish, you know, to go into the pipe and fish those lines rather than trying to run them through the walls.
Absolutely. I think Bill and a couple of other guys in last week's chat were kicking around a few ideas on that. Whenever I pull cable at somebody's house, you know, so you fish a wire snake through to pull the cable, I always throw in an extra piece of nylon twine with it. And I always recommend whenever you're pulling anything, new house or old house, if you throw that piece of nylon twine in there, now you've always got another way to fish something else through it. So, in the show notes, I threw in for something... trying to think of the name of it now. They go by a few different names. The one I like is Pulls It. It's basically, if you remember as a kid, you had those Chinese finger puzzle deals. This is somewhat like that. You shove your wires in the end of it. When you pull on it, it pulls them without pulling the ends off and gives you a nice way to snake several wires through through a connection as well. So those are two things I recommend from pulling cable.
Bill, let's talk a little bit about pulling cable, because I know you wanted to talk specifically about some of the cable installation and some of the testing behind that.
After that, I mean, really? You're talking to a professional with a guy with a fishing rod with a sinker on the end of it, dropping it from his attic to his basement. But okay, let's try. This would be great.
Sorry, man.
No. The biggest thing is I'm going in my house to do it the opposite way. I'm taking my main lab from the top floor and putting it in the basement. And the biggest thing is, like Kevin says, to have that home run. And my question back to Kevin was, you know, Kevin brought about taking, let's say, in a master bedroom, I need five landlines going to it. Basically, I want to take one run up to the master bedroom, put it into a switch, and, you know, swap them out to the DirecTV, to the whatever, the TV, the whatever media box. He was talking more about pulling, let's say, five dedicated lines to your master bedroom. Is that because of hops and latency that might be developing? Or, you know, I'm not saying put a switch in the first floor, second floor, and third floor and blow them out. I'm talking about for each room that you're using.
So what I... what I have right now is what you just described, is the one run to each room and then a switch in it, and that's worked fine for me. I think some people, and I think it comes down to preference. When I've talked to a few people who are currently building houses and kind of offer up exactly what you just said, you know, do you want to run multiple runs or do you want one run and a switch? A lot of them seem to have the idea that, you know, they don't want another networking device in that room and they just, they just want to plug each individual device in. But like you say, you know, so you run five, six wires up to a master bedroom, you know, you're not running gig over each one of those. So it is... To me, it's kind of a waste. Yeah, I think you have to have a little balance on what you're truly going to run from bandwidth. My network has been fine. I've never had any blocking issues or dropouts, and you know, a gigabit run is still a lot of data coming back from a lot of bandwidth available.
Right, and that's was I thought I was missing something, but my idea is to make sure we get a good run to each main, let's say, bedroom, every main area in the house, and then from there, if you got to use multiple devices, put a switch in, you know, for three or four ports, and that's fine. the biggest thing is to get that run in pre-existing homes. You might not have, like, your situation where you have a closet that's connected right above it. Is there's another closet or whatever it might be. And, you know, a couple of the my electrician friends, not only with the nylon, you know, they have the bucket, they cut a hole in it, and it's a big bucket of nylon string or twine. And to get it from the, I watched them drop it from the attic all the way down to the basement. So this way you cover your first floor from the basement. You got the second floor covered from the attic, but you need to get the cable from the bottom to the top, you know, how many runs you get. And they would, the basic thing they said was use a chain. Find a vent that's going out through your through the ceiling, the roof of your house, and you know that that's pretty much might be going all the way down to like the first floor basement and into the or first floor bathroom and into the basement. They take a chain, literally a chain. It looks like a thicker chain that you wear around your neck and just smaller than a bicycle chain, and they drop it down with the line on the back, you know, tied to it, and they use that the actual gravity to actually use that chain to flip around anything it might see and get you down into like a pre-existing house where you don't have that nice area to work through. You're really working next to HVAC, or you're working through vent pipes, you know, on the sides of it, and that's what we had to do at our house to get 10 lines from the attic down to the basement, including electrical.
So you're dealing with plenum-based lines as well, so
right
next to all that. So yeah.
Yeah, and you're trying to keep the electric away from your cat. And you know, my rule of thumb back in the day was that you would cross, the only time you would cross electric, you would never go parallel, you cross it 90 degrees and that's it. Now, is that true or not? I don't even know. But the problem is that there's really, in pre-existing houses, it might be a hard getting, you know, new electric down up one chute and find another area where you can get to the attic or from the attic to the basement. And that's where it gets really, you know, complicated.
How far do I need to keep my Cat 5E and Cat 6 away from my electrical lines? Is there a distance, a prescribed distance for me when I'm doing this? I want to keep them. And if I cross them, am I screwing things up? I mean, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Jim, I reckon about 2 foot.
Go ahead.
For an unshielded cable. No conduit or anything, just an unshielded cable.
Okay.
Stay away as far away as you possibly can, but 2 foot, I think, will probably be all right in open air.
I'd agree, and then of course you add a plenum-based, you know, lines to if you have to go near them, and you know, is for those short runs where you need that. So.
Same for cable, for my RJ, what's it, 6 or 40? What's cable standard cable? You know, that I'm bringing TV and internet on. Is that the copper cable? Is that the same thing, or is the shielding help keep it away?
It's just a shield. It's just a shielding that the plenum base is.
Okay.
It's just a shielding around your twisted pair.
Bill, what else do you got?
Well, I mean, that's the biggest thing is, you know, obviously in these installations where you have a house that you're going to install your network in, you know, you really want to make your cables. You know, you don't want to buy a cable because you not only do you have the end on it that's becomes a nightmare going through insulation. It will hook on to everything. And I know Rennie's going to have a couple videos that we're going to see how to make those ends real nice. But the biggest thing is once you do make that cable, is the cable correct? You know, you don't want to run that cable, put your ends on, and then find out that, you know, you didn't do it right. And so what I use, I have a tester. It basically, what it's, only thing it's testing is continuity. It's not testing throughput. It's basically testing is wire one to wire one on both ends, and which is really easy to do with the twisted pair. If you've done a lot of them, you know, in the middle of the night, all of a sudden you cross two over and you didn't realize it, or you didn't get one deep enough into the end, and it's not actually connected. It's really easy to do it on Amazon. I use a Data Shark tester. So you pop one in, on one end, you connect it to the connector. On the other end, you have the other end, transmitter, and it just shows you one to one and all the way through. Make sure you're right, you know, as far as your cable is correct. And then from there, I basically just use FTP and blast a big ISO through from one end to the other to make sure that I'm getting a through point I would expect.
$26.
Yeah, it's so really good to start
comes
with.
It comes in two parts. You just put one on one end, go down to the bottom, put it on the other, run the tests, right?
That's it. You know, it works for, you know, if you're putting ends in, you know, at the wall, you know, so even that, if you're doing nice wall plates and things of that nature, you can test it right there. It works really good just to get rid of this stupid errors we all make.
Sure. I cut somebody off. What? Somebody want to jump in there? Nope. Okay. What else, Bill? Give us a quick rundown. So you're changing some things, but kind of give us a quick rundown on how you've got your home network configured.
Yeah. Pretty much, I have every major room. Really quick, every major room: the den, the master bedroom, the lab, the basement. All have major lines going to them. If each area needs to have multiple connections, I put a green switch in there. Gigabit, obviously. When I went to Gigabit and to Cat 5e and changed the house the first time, I stopped using jumbo frame. So we can get rid of that whole idea now. But all my switches are all can deal with jumbo frames if needed. But it causes more problems than not, because most your TV, your cable boxes can't deal with those. So each room, I just put one main line and go from there. Put a switch in, everything gets it, we're good to go. In the basement, the main server is there. The server jumps over and connects to the electrical system in the house to do my home automation. And I just have two main switches. I got the big switch, the 16 port that runs the house, and then I have just two green switches, one for the master bedroom, one for the den. The kids' room has an Apple, God forbid, an Apple TV and a Vizio TV, and they work wirelessly. So, you know, it's pretty your basic setup, but you know, it gets a little more complicated as you dig deeper.
You you're running the Asus RT dual band wireless router.
Yeah,
I know. Paul Brerin was asking about that in chat. He was hoping somebody talk a little bit about that. How do you like that Asus component?
I have two installs already, and I have the third one that's going on in my house. I have it sitting right next to me. And so far, I'm getting deeper and deeper into the menus. The good thing is you get worried about Chinese products and security, but they have a forked firmware that is written by open source people, so you know that anything that's open is going to be patched. And it just, you know, VPN, you get your own personal cloud. It does, you know, an FTP. It does so much that there's no other router out there that can do as much as this can. You know, there isn't anything I've tried from the Netgears and everything.
It's got firewall. It's got quality service. It's got. Can you add, like, so do you use a super router? Do you use pfSense at all?
Yeah, that's what I would normally use. I pulled that off and I put back in my old Netgear while I'm working on upgrading the firmware on this. I wanted to get it in for tonight, but obviously that didn't happen. So, but it works so good. I have two businesses running it, and it's just the log files. Everything it does is just the second to none.
Nice.
The radius and everything you can get off of even your N connection. You don't have to have an AC connection, just your N connection. The radius is just so much more, and it's just it's really, really good hardware.
Cool. What, guys, any questions for Bill? You got anything else, Bill, you want to add in there?
No, that's pretty much it.
I did not. Let's see. I did not. You had a Vizio diagram that I didn't bring up. Let me bring it up.
I would throw in one other point on the discussion around plenum wire. If you're building a house and you're having a contractor do it, they're going to pull plenum as part of the code. If you're doing a lot of wiring yourself, it's a good idea to use plenum from the fire retardant point of view. And if you've ever seen an Ethernet cable burn, that PVC jacket is a pretty smoky mess. So if you're going to be pulling a lot of cable and doing it yourself, it's still a good idea to use plenum just from a safety point of view.
Cool. What is plenum, guys? I got no idea what you're talking about.
You can hit the Wikipedia site on plenum.
Is it a conduit or?
So, well, it's actually, they refer to it as plenum because it's the type of, it's the cable that you pull through plenum areas of the house or building. But in the States, it's referred to as the vinyl coating they use on top of it is a flame retardant type of coating. Okay. If you have big bunches of cable and a fire would break out, that cheap PVC coating that regular Ethernet cables have just starts smoking like crazy. And, you know, they've shown cases where a house will fill up with smoke rather quickly from cables burning in that fashion. Plus, because it burns so rapidly, it'll spread fire through the house as well or through the building as well. So I'm sure in other places they have a term for flame retardant. In the States, it's referred to as plenum cable.
Okay.
Very cool. Good stuff. Bill, I'm going to drop the link for your network in the show notes if folks want to look at it. I could not online. I could pull it up, but it was too small to show on the video. So I'll have folks, if they want to head over to the show notes right now, that'll be theaverageguy.tv/HT107. If you're listening to the recorded version of this, if you're live, that link won't work, guys, so don't go out there right now. You can go out there, and I'll have a link to Bill's network inside his place. All right, Rennie, we're going to try something first ever done here on the Home Tech podcast, trying to play some videos for these guys. We'll see if it actually works. But why don't you introduce a little bit of what you've got running kind of inside your place. You didn't have to put a diagram together for me, did you? So talk. Oh, I see it right there. Let's see if I can.
There's a link there to it.
Yep. Let me see if I can bring that up while you're talking. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I started, setting up a home network, I guess, about 5 years ago. Started off with wireless. That was going to be the answer to all my prayers. Unfortunately, it worked. Once a week or twice a week, and other times not at all. So I defaulted to a hardwired system and learned a bit about how to do your cabling yourself, and then looked at the difficulty of actually retrofitting that into an existing house. We only got one entry point for a telephone line, and that's in this office that I'm sitting in here. So that more or less decided this was going to be, ground zero for the home network. And half the house hasn't got any ceiling cavity in it, and the house is on a slab, so you can't go there. So it's been a bit tricky trying to get this cabling through the place. I'm a devotee of the bit of chain on the end of a string, same as Bill, but it's the best way to do it. You don't want to go poking around with a 6 foot of cable trying to get it through a hole the size of a quarter. It's just too hard. It's not going to happen. So
it's like a county fair trick, right? You're never going to win the prize.
No. But the first port of call was my son's room, which is only meters away, really. But we ran a cable up through the wall here and through the ceiling and into his room. And then I got adventurous and went all the way to the lounge room, which is about 20 meters away as the crow flies, 20 yards away as the crow flies. And for that, I had to go through a ceiling cavity, outside, round a doorway, out back in through the brickwork. That was all good fun.
You sound like a cable company.
Yeah, I know. but it worked. It worked.
Yeah.
For these reasons, I'm only running single cable to all these places. It's a bit hard to read on the diagram that I've got there, but doing the other end of the house where our games room is was the trickiest because I simply couldn't get there with one run of cable. So what I did is went through my son's room, put another wall access point on an opposite wall. So he's got a cable running from a switch in his room to the other side of his room. And that's where the line runs for the games room. So that's actually going through three switches, that connection. But it plays anything off my server fine. Doesn't seem to be any real degradation in internet access or anything like that. So even though it's a sort of a hodgepodge network going through three switches, it's the degradation's not really noticeable.
Yeah, I've had the same experience. I run, and actually out to the living room, I run through a switch that's underneath the TV, and then I actually go to the kids have a kind of a pooled computer area, and that got another switch for all their things. And I for what they do, they get just as good of, you know, just as good up and down from the internet as I get connected directly to the switch for the most, or right to the modem for the most part. So I didn't see a lot of degradation either going through two, you know, in this case it would be three hops for them to get out there.
Yeah. No, it doesn't seem to be a real issue these days. Switches are pretty smart these days. Wireless-wise, I've got two wireless access points, one here right behind me, and that services just one PC. The rest of the gear that uses that wireless connection are, you know, iPhones and iPads and laptops and that sort of thing. I've also added another wireless access point, which I mentioned before. I've sort of retasked an old modem router as a wireless access point, which is in the lounge room, which is, as I said, about 30 minutes away from the existing the Wi-Fi access point that's behind me. And I use that for outside, so I can control, you know, through my iPad or whatever, I can control my HTPC and set up playlists and change the music from outside, because we do a lot of entertaining outside in the summertime when it's not raining.
and the kangaroos aren't jumping through the yard.
Oh, they're always jumping through the yard.
Damn kangaroos!
They don't cause too much strife. They don't suck up too much bandwidth, put it that way.
Yeah. Out there sitting on your lawn. Just a funny story. You called me one day and you're like, "Hey, you got to look." And I think it was on your iPad, right? And you were
yeah.
You were showing me the kangaroos on your front lawn. It was great.
Yeah. So other than that, you tend to collect devices these days. And there's, you know, I don't know, last count there was 20 odd things on the wired network, mostly for entertainment purposes, but obviously, you know, servers and PCs and wireless access points and whatever, but it's great to have. Once you've got that backbone, you can stick anything on it and integrate it into your whole sort of entertainment experience for a start.
Yeah, it's been amazing how fast, just in the last couple years, how our networks have exploded. I mean, it wasn't long ago, I just had kind of the PCs on there, and we just had a handful of those, maybe not even that, maybe three, four in the house, and in the last 3 to 5 years, we've gone from maybe a handful to 25. I think maybe I have 30 or 40 devices that connect. I don't, Kevin, how many do you have? Do you remember on your breakdown what your connection is? Bill, you know I'm coming to you, so count yours.
I'd have to count through mine quick.
Quite a bit. Bill, how many do you think you've got on your network?
Wow.
the fact that we have to count is like, you know, it's crazy.
I left it off the diagram, I didn't include cell phones or printers because there's so many, right. But you're going to be easily in the 40s or 50s, and now with smart appliances, you're going to be in the 50s or 60s with the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And your neighbors stealing your Wi-Fi.
Greg, you just moved. And so did you count as you moved into the new place? Did you kind of count how many things you had to have? Is the new house wired, and did you have to count how many things you got on your network?
No, that was the interesting part. You know, the place that I moved from was hardwired, everything, because I owned it. This one's actually where I moved into a rental.
Okay.
So I didn't want to go running anything
other than
the server. And even though my server can handle, I mean, it's loaded. It still all goes out through an access Netgear WNDR so everything in my house is wireless, 100%.
Okay. Well, hang tight for a sec, Greg, on explaining that. Rennie's got a couple videos I want to show. Rennie, why don't you set these up real quick? You put some videos together for us.
Yeah. I mean, last week there was a lot of general discussion around, you know, the benefits of Cat 6 over Cat 5e and you know, a lot of talk about cabling your own house and everything, but I thought I'd just fill a bit of a knowledge gap for anybody out there who hasn't physically done it themselves and show you, first up, what's the physical difference between these cables, how to terminate the cables for various applications. So it just give you a quick demo of the tools you need and how it's done.
Yeah, let me see if I can. I'm still having trouble loading this first one for some reason. You said you put a new link out there, did you?
Yeah, in the show notes.
Okay, let me see if this real quick here while we're trying to get to that. For some reason on SkyDrive, the first video will not load. While this is going through it, talk through a little bit about what you covered there in that video.
Yeah, well, okay, I'll just talk to that video. If it ever comes up, it comes up. But yeah. Basically, Cat5e, I should have brought some with me, is pretty malleable. You can run it anywhere around corners. There's nothing sexy about it, just four twisted pairs, you know, green, blue, brown, and orange, and combinations of white. Cat 6, on the other hand, is far more rigid. It's got a plastic core that runs through the middle of it that insulates each twisted pair from each other, sort of plus shaped, if you can imagine that. That separates the four twisted pairs. The gauge of wire is heavier and it's far less malleable, but it is you know, recommended for, you know, virtually everything these days. Patch cables doesn't matter so much. If you're going to an appliance with only 100 meg interface, it's not going to matter at all. But for long runs, as the backbone of your home network, yeah, go Cat 6.
Okay. So in this video, you were just showing the various cables that are in there?
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
Okay, let's pop over to video 2.
Get the Cat 7 or Cat 8 I saw yesterday.
Let's pop over. Let's run video 2 here and see what you got here. This one will work.
First thing you want to do is make sure that each end of the cable is wired in exactly the same pattern. I just put the torch on this and you might be able to see we've got the order in which the cables are orientated. This is looking from the side where the clip used to be. So use that as a template to...
Okay, hold on. Let me pause that because for some reason it's not showing up correctly in the... In the screen. So let's take this full screen and we'll select this now and say start. Oh, there we go. Okay, let's restart it. Here we go.
Wire up the opposite end of the cable which you want to repair. If you don't wire them up in the same configuration on either end of the cable, you're going to end up with a crossover cable or perhaps one that won't even work at all. So I'm satisfied that cable arrangement is the same as the other one. Now you're going to need something called a crimping tool. This one was about $50 from recollection. Has various molds, if you like, which you can insert there to cater for different cables from RJ45 to telephone cables and other form factors that I've never even seen. So we'll just go ahead and finish this cable. You can see there's only one way, one orientation where the cable can go in. It stops, and you hear a satisfying little click when the job is done. And there we have a cable which is properly retained around the casing, and you're good to go.
So that... Rennie, that gives a good, you know, for the average guy, that's not, I mean, I think the hardest part is maybe getting those cables to line up inside that head correctly, right? I mean, that's the real challenge to get those things in there, right?
Absolutely. It's not that hard. It just takes a bit of patience. A bit like basket weaving. It's therapeutic, really. it's not that hard. If you keep the cable short enough, you don't have to have them very long. Sorry, the individual wires, I should say. It's not that hard to push them in there and get them lined up, but it can be a bit difficult, but it's not insurmountable by any stretch.
Yeah, that was for me. that was always, I was always, how much was that tool? I mean, what, how much does that cost?
I think it was about $50.
Okay, so not terrible. If you're going to run a lot, it probably pays for itself pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, the issue I find is that sometimes you need 3 yards of Ethernet cable, but you can only buy 5 or 6 or 10 or something, and you've got acres and acres of spare cable lying around on the floor somewhere. If you know how to terminate a cable, you can make your own and make 2 cables out of 1 just by cutting it in half and running what you need and turning the rest into another cable for another application. So
yeah, for sure. Okay, so pretty easy on that end. Set up a little bit what you're showing here.
This is how to terminate a wall plug, which is one of these things that goes into a... that's what you plug your cable into on the wall.
And here in the U.S., just about any hardware store you go to has these components available that you can purchase.
Yeah, I imagine they can't be too difficult to come by.
They're expensive, which is, Home Depot or Lowe's here in the United States, those products are fairly expensive to buy there, which just kills me. So you buy them online. Don't buy them in the home center if you can avoid it. Let me play this video for you here.
Okay.
Show you is how to terminate your cabling that you've run through the house to a wall plate. This is your typical in-wall adapter, the front insertion point for your patch cable. And on the back, you have a series of punch downs, I guess you'd call them. There are two major standards for how you set up your network. Happily called A and B. B, for some reason, is preferred, and that's what I've used in my house. And on the inside of the, it's a bit hard to see, but on the inside of the punch down, you have a color-coded guide for each of those formats, A and B. B in this case is in the middle, and that's what I'll be using. Okay, now we can see that the various wires have been put in the appropriate punch down slots. They'll happily sit there for a little while you prepare for the next stage, which is to punch these down. And for that, you'll need a tool, something like this. Well, you could even use a comb. I've seen electricians use combs before to terminate wires. This one's much more fun because it makes a really nice little noise when you get the job done. And it's also got a pair of scissors on the end of it that cuts the cable. So
that is handy.
It's all good fun. Not hot at the end of the document.
Just watch your fingers.
So you see what you need to do. Then all that's left to do is to mount it in a wall plate, bolt that onto your wall in any orientation which suits you, it doesn't really matter, and you're good to go.
Rennie, you helped us set a new standard on the Home Tech Podcast of having some video now to play. This actually worked really well. We used SkyDrive to get this done. You uploaded those videos, and we were able to play them through. It actually worked a lot easier than YouTube. I thought YouTube was going to be the way to do it, but this worked real well. So
that's good. We'll
have to notice out to hosts, if you want to do video, this is the way we're going to do it. So nice job.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any guys, any questions on that? Anything you want to add to it?
One thing I ran into, Jim, when you were talking about lining the wires up when you're crimping a regular RJ45 on, I ran into a few for a while that were push-throughs. So you'd push the wire actually through so you could see that it was lined up nicely, and it made it easier to crimp. The problem was then when you go to cut off the wires that are sticking out the end of the RJ45, you got to make sure you cut those really quick and really hard. Otherwise, you end up with little threads of wire. So just if people start heading down that route of making your own cables that way, the push-throughs look really easy to use, but you just got to be careful when you cut the ends off them.
And they have those other ones with the assistance, where you preload that little unit, with your 8 pairs or your 4 pair, and then you feed it into your jack, and
Yeah. I don't like those. Those I see all the time on this, the Cat 6s, and it drives me nuts.
Yeah. Bill, you so do you have a technique when you're running the cable into the jack? Is there a technique you use to get that? No, some guys are able to just spread. They do it so much, they can spread it with their thumb and just kind of slide it in, and it works super easy.
Not a chance. Nope. Spread them all out, put them back together, make sure they're cut evenly, slide them all the way in there. Once everything's nice and even and bottomed out, crimp it and test it. I just don't like Greg was talking about. There's some, I forget if it's Levitron or one of them, they have this little block where you put like three strands or four strands and two strands and four strands, and then you get it all preset and then you put it in. And that, it becomes a nightmare because you got to try to do like three things at the same time. So I have no technique whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. So it wasn't by choice, but because trust me, I thoroughly enjoyed a fully wired Cat 6 house. That was sweet. But I'm actually not disappointed with the connection. Although I'd like to increase it, so I'll be looking at the ASUS maybe. And but the sad thing is I do like the VF Sense router. So taking an ASUS and turning it into an access point is kind of depressing. But
yeah, Yeah, I bought that that DIR 655 that I was trying to run everything through. Everybody's heard that story now a couple times, but and that's not built for that. It sounds like that ASUS is kind of built to handle all that traffic.
Yeah, I'm using the Netgear. A lot of my gear is Netgear. Pretty happy with, but I've got like I said, 14 devices currently that while they're in the house. The TV, the Blu-ray player, the Xbox, the media center is at the moment out of this picture. I'm going to rebuild it, but we've got the two Lenovo Tablet 2 showed up. Those are running. Everything's really running on the 5 gigahertz band too. And you're right, as far as the distance, and I'm talking only 30, 40 feet away here, and I'm getting half the bars, but no signal drop at all, so I'll take that. But yeah, 14 devices, the laser printer, even the machine I'm talking on right now is wireless. So, and I haven't had any hiccups, freezes, any of that during this whole show. So I'm pretty happy with that. It's actually the first chance I've been on.
I'm sorry, Greg. Is that diagram only in our show notes? You don't have a link for that, do you? You didn't put that.
Yeah, it's only in your show notes.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, guys. I know you're asking me for a link for that. It's just in the show notes. We'll put a copy of it out there for you to look at. I know it's a little hard to see in the live stream. So actually, if you want to see a good, you might want to try the YouTube video right now. If you go all the way to the bottom of the page and click on that, we're live on YouTube as well. The resolution's a little bit better. See if that works any differently. So sorry, Greg, I interrupted you.
That's okay. It looks actually nice in the Hangout. Yeah, for the most part, it's 100% wireless and no major complaints. The TV runs on the 2.4 and taking the HTPC out of it and using the smart TV for the Netflix and the Vudu. I watched, I think it was Judge or whatever it was. I can't think the other day in 3D and no hiccups, no freezes. So pretty happy with the NDR 37 on there. And it's amazing. I mean, I've never had any issues with it. Like I said, the server can push a lot more than obviously my bottleneck is now the access point.
Right.
But
right.
My wife, the real test will be when the wife breaks out the Adobe Premiere again and starts pulling from the server, because everything I have is also on the server, so we're pulling everything wireless that we want to see.
Sure.
And I've got 60 gig SSDs in both the machines. Even my daughter's got a 60, and so everything is at the server.
Now, is the Rennie, welcome back. Is the server a is this a longer term thing for you guys? Or are you kind of in between something? So the rental's a short term thing, or do you see yourself being there for a while?
Oh, we'll be here for a while. There's no need. It's
so you're setting up. From your standpoint, you're setting up this wireless thing. It really needs to be successful because you really don't want to run cable, right?
Correct. Yeah. Right. No, and I'm not going to. I'll find a way if it's, you know, 24 access points, whatever it takes. No real issues with it so far. Like I said, other than trying to push, you know, bring down large files like I do.
Yeah. You know. And we didn't cover this. We asked Kevin what his up and down was. You are on Cox Cable there in Vegas, 25 down, 15 up. Pretty solid.
That's to a local server here in town. So okay. I forget what, speedtest.net or something, and they pulled it local.
Okay.
It'll drop down if I'm trying to pull it out of California or something like that. You know, it goes back down.
Do you pay for 15?
No, I pay for 5.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, I'm the same. I'm in the same boat. So hopefully nobody from Cox is listening. I pay for 3 and I get like 15. So it's great. For whatever reason, that works for me. Real quick, Rennie, what is your up and down there in Brisbane? You're probably muted, Rennie, again. Sorry. When you came in, you were muted. Nope, we still can't hear you yet. Sorry. We'll get you eventually.
I think he's planning that.
Yeah. I'll give him a minute. Bill, what's your up and down? Where are you at again?
I'm in New Jersey. We're at 50 and 10.
Oh, that's nice.
So, yeah, it's pretty nice. It's consistent, which is nice.
Yeah. So 50, 10 at home. What about the shop?
50 and 10. Yes.
Okay.
We always test the shop first and then we take it home. We are on the same system.
Okay. All right. Good enough. Rennie, did we get you back yet?
Am I here?
Okay. Yeah. We hear you. You bet.
Okay. 3 down, 800 up.
Wow.
800 kilowatts. Wow.
It's amazing that we even have you on a Google Hangout with that.
I just dropped out. It's just so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's still very impressive.
Yeah. No, and you know what? That does kind of speak to the to how good the Hangout technology has gotten. That you know, your video actually is really, really good right now to me, as I see it. And your up is not great. So they're doing some trickery to get that done. So Greg, real quick, I went down to the bottom part of your diagram. These are just some of the, so at the very bottom is kind of all your wireless devices that you have attached to the network then, right?
Correct. Yeah. Everything you see there. Yeah. That's the whole house there, literally. Other than I didn't put the wireless alarm in there and stuff like that, I can't access from I can access the alarm from the phone, but, or from a browser.
Right. And you are using pfSense as well?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, I'm doing the pfSense and have the WNDR 3700 hanging off of it.
Yeah, I really can't say enough good things about pfSense. If you haven't tried it yet, it took me a while to get to it. Mike Howard hounded me for a while to get there, but man, once I got on it, I am a believer. Kevin, I know in the beginning you said you were on it, moved away from it because you're on the you're on the 20, right? That has some smart capabilities, some routing and firewall defense built into it as well, right?
Yeah, it does. I'm still playing around a little bit with another free alternative out there from a used to be a company called Astero, was bought by a security company called Sophos. And for guys who like pfSense but maybe want to try a different product, Sophos has their home edition that's free. And lots of features, a full UTM, full firewall. And earlier when we were talking about, you know, DMZ and multiple LANs, another cool thing about doing the pfSense or the Sophos, or there's a couple of them other ones out there, because you're throwing it in a PC, you can add pretty much as many network connections as you want and set up separate, you know, DMZ and separate LANs. So there's some really nice things about building your own using pfSense or Sophos.
Okay. Greg, anything else you wanted to share?
It's pretty simple as far as the network side of it goes, you know. Sort of going into depth on, you know, the
the pieces that I'm using and what they're capable of, but nothing's really maximized. I have gear that's overkill for the way it's currently set up.
Yeah.
And but it's cool. That's what I get to look forward to. But I'm just happy that the little NDR can pull what it's pulling now, and get to try out the new Lenovo.
Nice. When did that come in? Yeah. How long do you have that?
About a week ago.
Oh, okay. And it's what is it? It's a Lenovo. It's
tablet
a two.
Two.
Tablet
yeah.
two. Yeah. Very nice. We're talking about that harder. During CES.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And real happy with it.
Very nice.
Yeah. All the Atoms are, we want them to all be i3s or 5s, but
right.
And I'll take the 10-hour battery life all day. So.
Let me ask you guys a question. So I'm going to just switch gears a little bit. Canadian geek, Chris Cook, out there, he was out earlier. He's left, so he's now listening to the recorded version of it. So, Chris, sorry you couldn't stay with us. But he'd asked a question earlier about subnets. And interested in asking you guys, do you guys stay on the – on it, and I don't – at this point, I kind of get quickly out of my comfort zone when we talk about subnets. But – 255.255.255.0, right, creates a single subnet that goes from between 1 and 254. Did I get that right? When you're creating a network, it creates that range of a network. Do you guys pretty much stay in that, I know a lot of guys use 192.168.0 or 1 and then, start at either 1 or 100 or whatever. You guys pretty much stay fairly simple with your networks and keep it all in that range, or do you get creative at all with your networks and the naming conventions of them and get fancy for some reason? Kevin, let me start with you. Pretty standard, or do you get kind of fancy with it?
I have the beer truck philosophy. If I get hit by a beer truck, somebody has to come in and show my wife how to run the network. So I keep it very simple. Years ago, I had a different switch, and I played around with VLANs a little bit. And there's a the small net builder website is a great place for guys to kind of see how others. Spiceworks is another great place to learn about subnets and VLANs and that type of stuff. But I've tried to keep it simple, keep a very flat network. And on the Zyzel firewall, that's why I was kind of excited to see that extra LAN port as a way to keep the network simple. It's all managed through the firewall, and that way I've got kind of the benefit of having a separate network without having to manage subnets and VLANs and that stuff.
Okay. Bill, how about you? What are you keeping it simple? Or you're slicing it up a little bit.
No, always trying to keep it simple. I don't want to put any subnets on it. If I'm doing a VLAN or something like that, maybe I'll put in another router so I can keep it isolated from the entire network, which I can do with the ASUS RT router. But there's no reason for it right now.
Okay.
I'm not going to use that many devices.
All right, Rennie.
Same, just bog standard, yeah.
Okay. Greg?
Yeah, no, same here. For the house, even if I'm messing around with something, I'll keep it on the same thing. I'm not doing anything where, unless you're going to run a separate domain or something in the house environment, I don't think so. If you're doing the school thing, okay, maybe. But, all I got to do is ask the wife. You got to go to the other subnet. She's going to throw something at me. So,
yeah.
We're going to keep it,
Yeah.
In a single subnet.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, but I do try to keep it down. I don't like having a whole 154 available to me. Let's keep it appropriate for the DHCP. So.
Yeah. One of the things, Mike, I work with Mike Howard when I was working with pfSense. He works through his network addresses and assigns ranges for various devices. So all his PCs are in a range. All his laptops are in a range. The phones might be in a range, networking devices, servers might be in a range. And because on pfSense, you can see there's a report where you can see the actual live traffic coming through and the bandwidth it's taking. It doesn't carry over the simple name. It gives you the network IP address for that device. And so if you've got your ranges and you kind of know what they are, you start reading that report kind of like the Matrix. All these numbers are floating down and you start seeing, oh, my kids are on this or the server's doing that or whatever. It is kind of cool, and I see why he does that. That has been, so when I went on pfSense, I just created a spreadsheet put all the numbers from 1 to 199. I was going to stay within 200. And then I kind of broke them up in a way. And then I have a DHCP zone as well. So when kids come over or whatever and their phone's attached to the network, they have a limited DHCP area. It's maybe 10 addresses where it'll give, you know, just give that out. And then if they're going to stay on the network for a while, I just assign them a static IP address and make them a part of a static list.
Yeah, well, it's nice because you can actually block them out of your network completely, those extra phones. You know, just give them internet access, but not allowed to the local.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. No, it's real handy that way. So that's kind of the that's kind of the way I keep mine simple, but then I make it a little more complex just by tracking every single IP that's coming through. That was real fun to watch that report when I first had PF, since I haven't looked at it, I'll be honest, a couple of weeks. You know, you watch that every day for a while, and then you got other things to do, you know, at some point. Guys, we're coming up on towards the end. Some great content. I want to just throw it out, though, to you. Anything that you wanted to cover that we didn't cover in the time that we've done this? Anything?
Randy mentioned outdoor wireless, and that's a few years ago. We renovated our house a bit, and you know, sometimes seamless steel siding or different siding materials can block Wi-Fi on you. And I was pleasantly surprised to see how affordable outdoor access points have gotten to be from a variety of vendors. And of course, back to the power over Ethernet, kind of a nice route to be able to hang a wireless access point on the outside of your house and only have to run a single Ethernet cable to it, and
absolutely
be able to have full Wi-Fi that way.
Mm-hmm. That gets complicated too. You know, I'm sorry. There's two ways of doing it, though. Are you using the same channel, same SSID that way to set up your access point, or are you doing it the other way and having the actual router set up via the MAC address, set up the access point to use? So when you don't have a switching problem, when you're passing through one zone into the other.
Maybe set them up like a mesh, you know.
What does that mean, Greg?
The way I've done it is to give, I've tried both, you know, giving them different channels and different names so that you know which one you're on, and going the other way and just giving them exactly the same SSID, put them on the same channel, and I can't find any discernible difference, really.
Mm-hmm.
The coverage is better when you're closer to the one or the other, really. That's about it.
I was going to throw that question out. Do you guys, from an SSD or SSID, sorry, SSID standpoint, and for the average guy, that's the name that shows up in the network, you know, in that area of available networks. If, you know, when you go to somebody's house and you turn on your phone and you see, you know, now every neighborhood you go to has got six or seven of those, it seems like, available. Do you guys hide it, or do you make it available? Do you put it out there? So is it public where people can see it, but you have it locked down? Or do you hide it and keep it locked down? Kevin, you open yours up, or do you lock it down?
I hide them, except okay. for a single one that's set up to be guest access.
Okay, so it's like a hotel when I come to your house.
It is.
So I can connect to your guest, and all I can get is internet. Is that right?
That is correct.
All right, very cool. That's a good way to do it. Bill, what about you? Open or closed?
I close the SSID, and I use MAC filtering as well for all devices. Now I'm going to probably dabble with the guests, but our houses are spread out enough where you'd have to really drive into the driveway to get close enough to get a good signal.
Okay. So, all right, Rennie, what about you?
Yeah, no security, broadcast the SSID. like Bill, I'm in the middle of nowhere. So it doesn't really matter. No one's going to get the signal anyway. So
Yeah. I mean, you don't have people around you, right? You're out in a spot where the nearest house is a ways away.
Yeah, it's about 100 meters away. So.
Okay, all right.
If I've got to use two wireless access points inside the house, no one's going to get it 100 meters away.
So. Yeah, for sure. Greg, what about you?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
I can see 18 of them on mine.
Oh, I bet.
I initially turn it on when I'm setting everything up, and once everything's the way I like it, I'll lock it up, and on a few things, then I'll do the MAC filtering. That's once I'm settled down on anything like at the last house. So now that I'm here, it'll be a little bit before I lock it down, just to make sure everything's the way I want it.
Yeah.
But it's quite interesting because I run, I run one for 2.4, I run one for 5, I run no gas, and I'm like, okay, I'm pushing everybody over 20 here. So, it was neat to see how many were actually on there. And, of course, you go through and you check them all, see who's locked up. And,
right,
They just got their new, their new Linksys,
No, for sure. Somebody out in chat, I think, has said, Mike Howard out there said, make a funny name. Make a funny name for your router or for your access point, and then broadcast it. Lock it down. Put a good password on it. Lock it down.
Well, it's interesting. Those passwords can tell you a lot about your neighborhoods. I got a guy that's he labeled his Chevy 1956, and I drive to the mailbox. I know whose that is because I see that Chevy sitting in the driveway.
Right.
And it's like, okay, and there's a few others like that, but that's the most blatantly obvious one. You can really assign, now you can know your neighborhood, so it can be good or bad, Sweet 16 could get a girl in trouble,
It's one of those things, I think, years ago, I would drive around looking for open access points. Remember, we'd war chalking or war driving or whatever it was, And anymore, whatever.
It's everywhere.
There's so many, and I don't even care if they're open. I mean, in the day they might have better internet connection than you, but the free Wi-Fi is so, prevalent. So everywhere now. It's just really it's not even worth the time to go out there and do it. So, well, guys, I do appreciate the extra time that you put into the show notes, and we will, of course, make those all available for everybody. I know it's difficult to see the show notes on the live stream. We just don't get good enough resolution to do that. If you're watching on YouTube, the resolution for that is a little better. Head over to youtube.com/theaverageguy. And this will be show 107, so look for that. Or head over to theaverageguy.tv/HT107. That'll be available here shortly as soon as we get the show notes up this weekend. Check that out. I'll try and have a copy of all their diagrams out there as well for you to view. So thank you, Rennie, and Kevin, and Greg, and Bill. Appreciate you guys coming out tonight. I'll remind folks... we just a few things coming up here. One, and Mike Amartis might even know this yet, but in a week and a half, so the weekend of March 9th or 10th, we're going to do a BYOB version of this where those guys are going to come on, and I'm going to talk about their network setups, and we're going to geek a little bit with Mike Fauché and Michael Amartis here in about a week and a half. By the way, Mike Amartis, Mike Fauché agreed to that, so I hope you're okay with it. And get the guys from BYOB to talk about their rigs in detail. So I'm looking forward to that. So that is coming up as well. Next week, next Thursday, just Daniel J. Lewis and myself with a home tech interview here on Thursday night, 8:00. And of course, Daniel J. Lewis is the voice behind the Audacity to podcast, and is really good with the Audacity tool. Does some training around it as well. So. If you're looking to get some more information on Audacity and how to use that and maybe even how to podcast with it, you're going to want to listen next week, 8 p.m. Central, here at theaverageguy.tv live. A reminder for the live listeners that are still out there, and we've got, we got to about four or five handfuls of you out there listening live and on YouTube. Tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, over at podcastersroundtable.com, or just watch it on G+ as well. Mike Howard and myself on the Podcasters Roundtable with Ray Ortega and Daniel J. Lewis as well. We're going to be talking about when is it time to start a second podcast. And, of course, you guys know that I'll start a second podcast like tomorrow. So not a big deal there. Mike Howard and I out there tomorrow evening. Just for the live guys, you can disregard it if you're listening to the recorded version. It's already passed. You can catch the episode over at podcastersroundtable.com. And, we missed Christian and Andrew tonight. Guys, thanks for... doing what you do. I know you guys both needed the night off, and so we will catch them both back in 2 weeks. Actually, 2 weeks from tonight, Christian is on. Christian and Gary, his dad, spent a whole bunch of time just revamping their network as well and installed everything new with Windows Server 2012. So Christian's going to come on and talk about the Johnson Monster setup in his place. They've got Active Directory moving. They've got SharePoint going on. They've got Exchange running. This is all at their house, by the way. They have an amazing setup over there at the Johnson place. And so that's 2 weeks from tonight. Christian will be on talking about that. It'll be Andrew, Christian, and myself, and we'll be quizzing Christian on his new setup. So watch for that coming as well. If you're new to podcasting and you're looking for an easy way to listen to these shows, the audio is available out at Stitcher.com. Stitcher's available for both Android and iPhone platforms. It's a great way to listen to the podcast, both at home and on the road. Of course, you can catch this show and all the past ones, and even maybe some of the future ones, at Stitcher.com. Search Home Tech. It's education for your ears. And, of course, you can view and subscribe to the show out on YouTube, youtube.com/theaverageguy, or catch the show each week, 8 p.m. Central, over at theaverageguy.tv/live. My family's having a good time over in the other room. You can probably hear them just laughing away. You know, they know I podcast every Thursday night at this time. They know that, and yet they still do that. That's okay. Don't forget, we have groups on Facebook, and that Facebook group is just dynamite. facebook.com/group/theaverageguy. And, of course, on Google Plus, just search The Average Guy Podcast. We got a bunch of stuff out there to follow as well. And then don't forget, when you're purchasing from Amazon, head out to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon or amazon.theaverageguy.tv. And anything you buy, we make a little commission off, and we recycle those back into giveaways. Oh, I forgot the Drobo giveaway, word of the podcast, right till the very end. So this will be the last Thursday night we're giving away a Drobo. So, guys, if you're hanging out in chat, just hang out for one more minute because I'm going to give you a word that you can win a Drobo FS. If you don't know what that is, go out to theaverageguy.tv/giveaway, and you too can win the Drobo FS. Mike Howard, why didn't you remind me earlier in the show to give away the Drobo? Mike and I are doing a joint giveaway. If you head over to jpegtoraw.com, he has given it away as well. It's the same unit. We're both giving away the same thing. And so the word tonight is just home tech. Just put it in, home tech, H-O-M-E-T-E-C-H. Head over to theaverageguy.tv/giveaway, and there's a sign-up form right there. You can do that. And just by listening to the podcast, actually, you can win that Drobo FS, or you can share that post out on Facebook to get another chance to win as well. So head out there. We have almost about 100 folks who've put in for that. So we appreciate your support of the podcast. And, of course, those Amazon dollars I talked about go back into giveaways. And when the Drobo's gone, we will do another giveaway for April. It's coming up, so I appreciate it. Guys, thanks for coming out tonight. We'll do it again next Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, here at theaverageguy.tv live. Hang around for the post show. We'll do some more chatting. Good night, everybody.